If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
The goal is to not get arrested of us following Sanderson to his hotel room.
We will get we're going to talk with Sanderson.
Whether he wants to or not.
We're talking with him.
Welcome back, everybody, to another Tutor Ramble episode. I'm one of your hosts, Austin.
And I'm the other one, Richard.
And today, we are simps.
We are simps.
Well, every day.
Of the highest order.
Because Brandon Sanderson, you've heard us talk about him on the channel. Our goal of this channel is to get him on to talk to the man himself.
I've also just realized how we're joking a little bit about the use of the word simp. But then, further reflection, that's more accurate. You know how much money I have thrown at my computer screen?
Toward Brandon Sanderson? Yes.
Off of the hope and the prayer that I get some attention?
If you look behind us, we have the Kaladin and Zeth.
Oh, yeah, no.
Not just that, we have all the minifigs, because Sanderson had that Kickstarter where he sold all the minifigs from Stormlight, and that cost us over $500 to $600.
Yeah, that was a bit much. Oh, God. Yeah, Brandon Sanderson is the biggest e-boy I spend money on.
And I'm here for it.
Yeah.
We support it. This recent news came out with Brandon Sanderson of he has the Words of Radiance, the second book in the Stormlight Archive, leatherbound edition. And not just that announcement came, but he wrote another secret project. For those that don't know, he had this big announcement in March of 2022, where he was, while writing all of his big series like Mistborn and Stormlight and Dead, everything, he just felt like writing 4 additional novels. And you can see those up behind me a little bit in the screen. And then, again, while he was writing more books this year and finishing up book 5 of Stormlight Archive, he just, you know, did a little oopsie.
Just a little deviation, little side quest.
And he just oopsied out another secret project novel, another novel that's coming, which we're getting.
Yeah.
Of course we are. We'll have the link down below. We're not sponsored or anything. We just love Brandon Sanderson. And the more important thing from that, and this whole episode, we're really just going to go into why Brandon Sanderson is our, can I speak for you on that? Or I'll speak for me and then see if you agree with this. Why he's my favorite living author. And that goes beyond just his actual books, which I love and adore, but as a person.
I really enjoy his books. However, I enjoy Brandon Sanderson as an author more than his books and his practice. Everything that we're going to talk about today, he is what every author should aspire to do in if their goal is to best service their fans, then Brandon Sanderson is the ideal.
That's a great take. That's a great take. I'm with you on that. I just also love his books. Yeah, just
same,
as much.
Same here. I love reading them, so it's also good, too. I'm happy that I enjoy the man and also his works.
That would suck if he's just a great guy, but man, they're tough to get through. Just how would you?
Yeah.
So the other big news that came out when he was announcing the Words of Radiance Leatherbound, he was announcing another secret project. He also threw in there that he successfully negotiated with Amazon, with Audible,
to actually increase some of the transparency that authors now get to have in 2024.
Pretend I'm out of the loop. So talking to me, pretend I'm out of the loop and give me up to date. What happened with Brandon Sanderson Audible for those unaware?
So during his secret projects, the 2 years ago, he decided to not release the audiobook on Audible because
all of the audiobooks
that he controlled. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have control over all of his books due to contracts and
publishing or whatever.
The secret projects were owned by only himself. Mm-hmm. So he decided not to release it on Audible because he was upset with the business practices that they do. Chiefly among them is the price. Like, they really underpay authors. If you are exclusive to Audible, which locks you down from a bunch of other options, 40%.
This is what the authors make 40% on their book.
On their sale.
Right.
Less than half.
And that's if you're only working with Audible.
If you're not exclusive to Audible, it's 25% of proceeds.
The book that you wrote, you get 25%
of it. And it's a digital copy that, one, I want to emphasize that Audible does not help you at all in the production of the book. It'd be one thing because getting an audiobook made is difficult. You have to hire a narrator. It's an expensive process and a long time. So there is a significant cost to that. Mm-hmm. If Audible was paying for some of that, I understand a little bit larger cut for them, but they're not doing any of that. They're just hosting it. And they can charge their ridiculous rates because they have a monopoly on the market, effectively.
And that's compared to in other industries, 70-80% is what.
Oh, yeah. Video games. You go across the list.
Hey, on YouTube, normally, we're lucky to get 55%.
Yeah.
YouTube, hey, we're not coming out. We'll take our 55.
But the counter argument, the better argument to have if we're on Steel Man Audible's position is they have the largest platform and the largest access to readers. And that you're getting 20, even if you're doing 25% of your sales on Audible, you're making more money than if you were to go to any other platform.
It's kind of how YouTube's allowed to get away with 55% for creators on ads.
Exactly.
Because where else are you going to go? Where else are you watching videos online?
You go to, what is it, Vimeo? You're going to watch a Vimeo?
We could release a Vimeo.
That'd be funny.
But think about that, because if YouTube paid us 25% to post videos, we'd still do it. Because the platform gets you eyeballs everywhere else. Just like Audible gets all the eyeballs on a book. So you see why they're able to charge that and people still use them.
Oh, yeah. And now this is just kind of like a little insider on YouTube stuff, is at least how I see YouTube, is YouTube, it pays a lot of money. It's a very expensive platform to run.
Oh, it's chunky.
And all of the costs that go into it, they provide creators like us a massive platform that we could never ever achieve on our own. And so them taking 55%
they take 45. Yeah, 45, we keep 55. Yeah,
to me that seems more than fair.
Yeah, no, so, like, I was genuinely saying, if we took 25%, still the value of YouTube isn't the ad revenue is very small in comparison to everything. It's very, very, very small.
You have to think of it, YouTube is not just giving you money, they're giving you a platform.
Right.
And if I were to apply that to Audible, I kind of see their point. I still think it's criminal that the author of a book makes less than half of the sale of their book.
Also, the difference of one YouTube video takes us like a good Tuesday night to make. And for the author, that's many Tuesday nights to
produce that book. That's at least three. at least.
For Sanderson, maybe.
Maybe.
Because that's the big thing about Sanderson here is, well, first off, us talking about how quick, fast of a writer he is. Why he is my favorite person as an author behind the screens is he advocated to Audible. He said, hey, I am not going to Audible for these secret projects. I'm making a stand here for all the smaller authors, and I want change. And Audible and him went into negotiations and talks because Sanderson's one of the best-selling authors in the U.S. especially, but even the world. And not just that, because his book, Oathbringer, book three in the Stormlight Archive, was the most pre-ordered book in Audible history. So this is Sanderson taking a stand and going, hey, I am one of the best-selling authors. He said this in his blog that came out, said, hey, mm-hmm. I can do this because I have the platform to. And so he went to Audible, and he actually made them change. So he's putting this next secret project novel on Audible. Now, did Audible make all the changes necessary that he wanted?
No. And I think the key one here is Audible made, I think, some significant changes in transparency of information, which is very valuable. A big problem that they've had before is authors had no real idea what constituted a sale. How was it sold? Was it for a credit? Was it for this? Like, what percentage did they get in for that? And there was a lot of mystery on how much they were actually going to get that month. That it was very inconsistent. Audible's change is mostly through the transparency of what a sale technically is, what a return is, what that sale was from. So the author has a better understanding of how much money they're going to get at the end of the month.
Yeah.
Which is very good. That's a very good thing that I don't think as even like Spotify or any of these other sites do the same. So that's great. As far as I know from the blog post that Brandon Sanderson gave,
I have a pull up here. Want me to quote it?
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Cause I don't think there's too much change on price.
Yeah, in his own words, he said, I'm happy to say that this stand, and he's talking about the stand against Audible and negotiating with them, has borne some fruit. I've spent the last year in contact with Audible and other audio distributors, and have pushed carefully but forcefully for them to step up. A few weeks ago, three key officers high in Audible structure flew to Dragonsteel offices, which he owns Dragonsteel, and presented us a new royalty structure they intend to offer to independent writers and small publishers. So this isn't just for the big guys. He was doing this for everybody. And Brandon continues to say, this new structure doesn't give everything I've wanted, and there is still work to do, but it is encouraging. They showed me new minimum royalty rates for authors, and they are, as per my suggestions, improved over the previous ones. Moreover, this structure will move to a system like I have requested, a system that pays more predictably on each credit spent, and that is more transparent for authors. As you were talking about,
yeah.
Then Audible will be paying royalties monthly instead of quarterly, and will provide a spreadsheet that better shows how they split up the money received with their authors. And now he goes on later in this article to say, hey, they're not given 70% royalty, and they continue to reserve the best royalties for authors who are exclusive to them, and as well as authors continue to have very little control over pricing. So he's saying these things are still problems. But on Sanderson's end here, it's, hey, Audible's actually meeting him on the table, meeting him maybe not halfway, but a quarter way. They're actually pushing toward some asks. And so when you're Sanderson here, the right thing to do is go, okay, Audible actually budged. We got them to go somewhere. All right, I'll put this on Audible's platform. That's good. They're willing to negotiate. That's great. We'll make the other changes down the line. But I think it's great for Sanderson here to go, hey, they budged a little bit. I'm going to be stubborn and not go to Audible now. That's the wrong way to do negotiations. So he's handling this perfectly.
You can't just ask for everything. They don't give you everything, and then you leave. They're never going to negotiate with you again.
Because you're not both coming in good faith.
No, so him making the right step of like actually putting this book on Audible is a good step. Let's hope that a little further down the line, Brandon Sanderson will push a little more, you know, threaten to take another book off, and maybe they'll come to negotiate.
Have Audible by the neck.
Let's see. Let's see where it goes. But it is a great step. It's personally not enough for me to switch back to Audible as a consumer. I'm still not there yet. I'm still rocking Libro FM. I like them, and that's
a conflict of interest, though. That's a conflict of interest.
Why?
You're Jeff Bezos.
Oh.
You are bald man allowed. Jeff Bezos. You are.
I'm not allowed to consume my own product.
No, you have to only go to Audible.
Oh, yeah. See, I'm sorry.
You are the guy. If you were negotiating with Amazon, though, and you're obviously he's not negotiating with Bezos. This is beyond. There's other people at Audible.
Yeah.
What would you do in this situation to try to meet more toward that 70% royalty? Or what's the next step you think?
The next step is get more authors on his, like,
on page. Yeah,
Sanderson's the big dog, but he can get a lot of other big slash medium dogs on his side.
Yeah.
And then lobby again and see if more changes can be made.
Right.
But hey, this is a great step. Which absolutely. The fact that he, I think it's very, want to make it very clear to people that are listening and watching that Sanderson took a hit, a significant financial hit to do this for other authors.
Yeah, he was only able to afford 3 movie theaters after.
He does have a lot of money. He's well off. But it does say something that he did take a financial hit to actually lobby for smaller creators.
Oh, yeah.
And that's something very commendable. And
Sanderson, one, deserves the money. And two, he taking that hit is... He didn't have to do that at all.
No.
I think one of the reasons we both love him so much is he's always thinking from the fan perspective. He's always thinking from the reader perspective. So when he's talking to Audible here, the thing he's thinking of is, hey, I was also a small guy trying to make it in the author space. Sanderson's background is he was going to school. He was going to go in medicine of some sort, being a doctor of some sort. And just decided, no, I want to write. And his parents obviously were like, ah. So Sanderson knew how much of a risk that was and what he's taking a safe career to go in this. Will I make it as a writer? I don't know. But he just loved to do it. And so when he was reading books as a kid, as a teen, as a young adult, he is taking the things he wish authors did as a reader. And he's doing that as an author. And one of those big things is, beyond just talking and advocating for all the small authors out there, he is super connected with the fans. As in, he's updating every single week. He has a weekly update that says, this is the percentage I'm done with this book, and this book, and this book. And I love that.
Oh, it's perfect. That is the ideal way to communicate with fans.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of anything better, really, especially for a dedicated fan base. Actually seeing the author give an update kind of even every week, but doesn't even have to do it that often, but giving an update of percentage, like, here's how much I'm done with this book. And you kind of rely, just have a sense of trust that you know the book's coming.
Like, Sanderson updates me more about his life than you do about your life.
It's not incorrect. That's not incorrect.
How's Richard doing? I should ask. That's hasn't come up in several weeks. Like, behind the screen here, we record the podcast and never talk.
Yeah, I like, I was, before this podcast, before recording, I was just sitting in the dark listening to my audiobook.
That's funny, because that is true, actually. Yeah. I walked down, I said, Richard, are you okay? Yeah, his cap was covering his eyes. He's like, you don't even understand what I'm reading, bro. It's just too deep.
I'm reading The Book That Wouldn't Burn, by the way. It's Mark, it's pretty good.
Yeah. I'm reading How to Leave Dark.
I'm ding percent done with 40%.
Oh, nice. What if we did... Wait a second. What if we started... Oh, I don't think we feasibly can, because sometimes we record podcasts that come out way later.
Yeah, but we could record a separate video.
What if we tried to emulate Sanderson and we started updating with what we're reading, our TBR...
We could record a short video, and, you know, it's 2 minutes long of just what we're reading, and give an update every, like, Monday or something.
Everybody, please comment down below if you would like something like that, because I love that idea.
It'd be kind of fun.
If we had a little thing of, hey, we're reading this, we're percent done, and it could keep people in the loop.
Yeah. I think that's actually a really good idea.
I think we should just use these pods as brainstorming sessions.
It's working pretty well for me.
Like, what can go wrong with just following what Sanderson does? Nothing. Nothing.
No.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
Okay. Let us know if you'd want that in the comments below. That'd be awesome. So that... Oh, go ahead. You have a thought there?
I want to just tie on to this of what Sanderson does that we like to emulate, and what I think is a lesson for other smaller creators. And this is harder for smaller creators. Of course, Sanderson's the big dog. He can do this. But Sanderson, I think, is showing the way of how authors can actually get paid with writing.
Mm-hmm.
Where, if I've learned kind of anything from my useless business degree, that the important thing of having an audience to sell to, you actually have to have things to sell. Right. And that most authors have, like, what's their top dollar thing they can sell? $25, $30 hardback book. You're not.
Which they don't make all the margins on
exactly.
That
yeah. You're not going to get rich if your top product is $30 and the margins on that is not that great either. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a lot of costs that go into that, and then inventory, like, terrible, totally terrible right. Margins. Sanderson makes the bulk, like Dragon Steel. All the money doesn't come from these books. It comes from exclusively the
leather-bound, the leather-bound editions,
all the merch.
Signed.
Exactly.
And that's the advice he gave on one of his videos, was saying never, if you're making a deal with a publisher, never give away your special edition rights. Because if all else fails, if you're making very little money, you got the deal and you're so happy, but you still need to make money in the future, it's writing, so it's not a guaranteed business. The one way you can guarantee at least something is if you have a small fan base of, let's even just say thousands of people. I know that seems like a lot, but let's say hundreds of people really like your book, and you have a special edition comes out, and those hundreds of people would really want to support that. That is where you can get your income over selling even a bunch of mass market, because those mass market, mm-hmm. you're making cents to dollars.
Oh, yeah. I think it's the better business models, basically predicting and trying to go toward a better funnel for authors, that
yeah.
you have the cheapest option being your ebook. Try and make that the cheapest option. If you can afford it, maybe free. Mm-hmm. If you can offer an ebook, which several authors do, like Will Wright. Yeah, Wright? I never can pronounce his name. It's fine. People know. But before a new book comes out, yep. he offers like his entire catalog before mm-hmm. it for free.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So if you have upper tier or higher priced ticketed items above a hardcover book, yep. if you have options for people to buy and your book's good and people really like your stuff, people want to give you money.
Yeah.
That's just how it is. If you have an audience, they like it, they want to give you money. You need to find something that you can give them of value. Sanderson does it perfectly. And so I think a lot of authors need to get on that train if they want to do that. Now, I mean, that's not every author wants to do that. No. Other authors have families and like other careers. That's like, hey, this is just for fun.
Sanderson does have a family, and it seems super functional and lovable. I just, I don't know how he functions with his family, with writing, the amount he writes. On top of that, he does a podcast like we do.
Oh, yeah.
On top of that, runs a company. On top of that, teaches lectures at BYU. And so on the end of the spectrum where he's helping authors that are publishing, going, hey, here's how you need to make your deals. And hey, I'm going to advocate with Audible and help smaller authors. He's even helping at the early stage where he has these lectures at BYU. And you could see them. They're all posted online. I've watched every lecture maybe a dozen times over. You cannot get a better lecture for free. Anywhere on writing. This is the creme de la creme that I've ever seen. I see a masterclass, people like Neil Gaiman have given writing lessons. I haven't gotten into those, but you have to pay for that. If you want mm-hmm. a free writing lesson, just go right now, look up Brandon Sanderson Lecture Series, BYU, because he goes over characters, plotting, world building. He goes over every section. And on those lectures, he's just teaching people how he writes. And hey, it might not work for you. This is how it worked for me. And does this every year at BYU for a semester, or maybe it interchanges every other year, but he always posts the stuff. And he's not just teaching at BYU and then teaching everybody how he became a big writer, how he works in his process. He's also just randomly posts shorts or TikToks or YouTube videos on writing advice. And he's constantly in a podcast every week with Dan Wells where writing stuff comes up. He's just going like, oh, here's this and here's that.
And also just information on stories and critique and
yeah.
giving information on
he
why
keeps
things
nothing.
Work and wait. Yeah. He gives away the secret for free.
That's it. You just need to have his insane discipline and mentality and obviously be his expertise.
His yeah. talent and discipline. Yes. Combined makes him a monster.
And that's why he's the perfect author in that way, because he has that accountant mindset he got from his mom. His mother's an accountant, and he has that kind of just deadline. He doesn't have a crazy writing process. His writing process isn't just, I'm throwing out books every couple months because I just binge and binge and binge. I do that for 24 hours. He has a normal day where he works on writing for 8 hours. He has a four-hour session. Writes for 4 hours, has a word count he gets to, does other stuff, comes back, writes for another 4 hours, and that's it. He doesn't do anything crazy. It's quite literally just, I just don't miss a writing session. he if you do the same thing consistently enough, and he'll tell you all this, you can go look up his how he writes. It's that simple. He just does the same thing for a long enough period of time.
Yeah.
And
no, consistency is the key to all success in every single endeavor. It's never even really talent. It's always consistency.
Honestly, you don't even have to do things well. The talent can follow usually from the consistency.
No, God. It is amazing how, I mean, I think about in a smaller degree, our whole podcast and everything.
Yeah.
You go back to our first video and it's like,
don't do that, by the way. Yeah. Don't go there.
It's pretty bad.
Yeah.
But we have consistency. Every single week we were uploading one video at minimum Mondays. Monday, 8 a.m. from that day to today has been consistent.
Sometimes we got really close to not getting there, but...
We got close, but we did it.
We did it.
And now we're doing two. And that consistency is important. And with that comes improved skill, all these different things. But Sanderson uses that to increase his writing ability.
Yeah.
And versus... I may not think like his books are... the best of the best.
But they are.
You know what I mean? Yeah,
but they are. No. But before like you correct that, but they are.
I love his books.
Yeah.
But, like, do I like this book better or that book? Sure. I have different favorites.
Doesn't matter in this discussion. You're just saying him as a man.
Him as a man, but also his consistency. Yeah. Of he doesn't have, like, the one-hit wonder, which, person, maybe this is a hot take, but I think Orson Scott Card, kind of a one-hit wonder. A little bit.
I don't think it's a hot take. I think people agree with
that. Do people agree with that? Yeah. I don't. I've read a lot of his other series, and oh boy, he has a pattern, and I don't like his pattern. Versus Sanderson, he has a pattern. I love it.
Yeah.
His books are consistently all really good. I don't think there's like a single miss. There's like, they're all high quality and very.
There's valleys and bigger valleys. Or no, sorry, not the opposite. There's hills and mountains.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. So it's either you go up the hill or you go up to the mountain. There's never hills and valleys. It's hills and mountains.
Yes.
Got it.
That's what I do love about it. Like, I've been picking through the Skyward series, which not a lot of people talk about really in Cosmereverse, because it's not Cosmere. But people don't talk about it in Sanderson's works, really. I've tried to look online. Just not a lot of attention.
Right.
I really enjoy it. I finished up Defiant, which is the end of that first four book series, and very thoroughly enjoyed it. Fun characters, enjoyable series.
Oh, yeah.
And no one talks about it, really. So
it's just good stuff, though.
It's good stuff. And oh, love it.
So he's, as a writer, obviously he's a good writer.
Yeah.
And beyond that, being a good person and having all this connection with fans, people like us who just obsess over him and talk nonstop about him. Another quality behind the writing speed, behind Audible, behind all that, is he runs a company as well.
Yeah.
he has Dragonsteel, and that whole company is where he puts out these leather bounds, where he puts out these Kickstarters and all this stuff. So I think he has about 50 employees or so, roughly speaking, which is a mid-sized company. And that's got to feel so good as an author to actually create a mid-sized
company for a single author's works.
Yeah, one person. That is not common at all.
No, it is not. That's kind of insane.
It basically runs as a publishing company. And he has 50 or so employees, that they have social media people, everything. And on top of that, he has Dragonsteel Con. What's the correct name for that? The Dragonsteel Convention.
It's a Dragonsteel Convention still run by Dragonsteel.
Yeah. Which Rich and I are going to. It's gonna be
we are.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, if you're going 2024, we we'll be there.
December 5th to 8th, I believe. And that's in Salt Lake City. Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a time.
It's going to be a time.
The goal is to actually meet Sanderson.
The goal is to not get arrested of us following Sanderson to his hotel room.
True.
So that's
going to... Would he go to his hotel room in his own... Wouldn't he just go home?
Yeah, he does live there, doesn't he?
He lives there.
Okay, that's worse then.
Yeah, but I mean, we'll be lost in the crowd of fans like cheering outside of his home.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what happens, right?
That's what happens for an author.
we're one removed from Sanderson in so many ways, where we've talked to people who know Sanderson very well. We just got to get that next step. That's it.
Oh, God. It is insane how we are one removed several different times from Sanderson.
Yeah.
And it bothers me that we're so close.
It just feels further.
Oh, I know.
Oh, we're going to get there.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
One day, this year, we will get we're going to talk with Sanderson.
Whether he wants to or not.
We're talking with him.
Oh, don't send this to Sanderson.
Send it to
not him. That clip. No, everything else. Oh, man. That would be so cool, though, if there is that day where instead of us stalking him, we are invited. That would be great.
That'd be nice.
That'd be a nice time.
I would love to be invited.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm not invited, you know, I'm a see him. I'm a see him one way or the other.
I like that we have to laugh to make sure it's a joke, because it's not. Just in case people go back here and they're like the stalkers that were outside.
Were they joking? Were they not? You can never tell.
It's yeah.
The only way you can tell if we're joking is if you don't see us being arrested. If we're arrested, we weren't joking. If we aren't arrested, then
there you go.
It was a joke.
There you go. Good. Good logic. Now, what's another reason you love our man Sando? Why is he the GOAT to you? Because we're going over, I want to hit all the topics of just why people who maybe you heard Brandon Sanderson haven't picked up one of his books. This is why, as an author, you just should. He's the best. So what's another reason?
As an author,
yeah.
What I really enjoy is very few authors, I think, have the ability to make you fall in love with characters as quickly as Sanderson does.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's his biggest strength of he locks into what makes people love a character and doesn't let go. Other authors have different skill sets. I think Sanderson has great skill in most realms. He great world builder. World building, his action is super entertaining. Stormlight series being like height of the action. I think Mistborn also. But the only thing that I would say, like, overall, like, would I want more of, or like, like, I've read other authors I think are better. It's like dialogue and prose.
That's not very Sanderson simpy of you. You need to...
Oh, am I being too nuanced? And,
yeah. No, that's a different episode.
Oh, that's a different
stop,
episode.
Stop.
No, he's perfect. Perfect along in all realms good. That you never miss.
Now, when we review one of his books, you can get more nuanced.
Oh, okay. Sorry. This is the simp session.
Yes.
I forgot about that.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Know your place. This is for me, okay?
Yeah.
Stormlight's still my favorite series. Oathbringer's my favorite book. In that top three, it changes depending on the day you ask me what my favorite book is.
Mm-hmm.
And you know the other ones.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Sword of Kaigan. And Golden Sun. Those are my three. It just depends on when you ask me what mood I'm in. Right now, I'm definitely in an Oathbringer mood.
Yeah.
Just talking Sando. I want to mention this as well. So going back to him outside the writing itself,
mm-hmm.
couple of things. One is how he talks about other people's works and how he reviews things. Now, he doesn't go out there he's obviously in the pop culture space when new things come out, fantasy, sci-fi related.
Especially with his podcast.
Yes, especially with his podcast, and especially with things that he's a bit connected to, like Wheel of Time, for example. he finished up Wheel of Time. So when the Wheel of Time show was coming out, he said a few things here and there. And I like how he always talks about other shows or adaptations or things in the zeitgeist. He talks about them both critically, but not crudely. He's honest, but tactful. You could tell he doesn't like it, but he's not going to go out there and bash somebody as well, like us, who just go, "It was so bad, and I can't believe." He's not like us. He has more politeness to him.
Well, yeah, he doesn't really have the luxury to be crude, because it's just kind of a professional courtesy that you don't crap on other people's works. There's a difference, but and again, maybe people would comment saying like, "Oh, you got to be honest. That's deceitful if you're not honest about all your opinions." It's like, when you're a professional in the space, like, especially with a creative endeavor, you realize that just because something isn't for you doesn't mean it's not particularly good. And that doesn't mean it doesn't have another particular audience. And for you as a very influential creator, person in the space, don't try and destroy another creator's sales, because just let them have the audience that they have and let the work speak for itself. It's just not really, like, there's plenty of books that I'll read and then, hey, it's not particularly for me, but I also don't think it's like it wouldn't have any audience. Mm-hmm. And I can understand with a certain level of influence, you have to be careful about that, to not, you know, destroy someone else's work.
And right, when it comes to when he punches up, you can tell he's much more open about things. Mm-hmm. So Wheel of Time show comes out, he's very connected with it. If there's a scale of honesties on one end of the spectrum and politeness is on the other, I think he leans into the honesty much more. And
yeah.
Wheel of Time season 2 episode 8 came out, and
he was negative.
He was negative about it and very honest about his thoughts about it when everybody else seemed to really like it, or at least in our bubble, a lot of people seemed to like it.
Yeah, a lot of people liked that episode, and that episode broke me.
We did not like it.
Oh, yeah.
And
I had the tiniest fraction of hope after like episode like 2 or 3. I was like, you know what, it's different, but it's not that bad. It's
a little cope.
A little cope. I was huffing some copium, going, you know what, some of the action's pretty good. I like, you know, some of the dialogue was not terrible,
and the finale was, but here's the thing. Sanderson expressed that he didn't like the finale either. And to his credit, a lot of people, he was watching it, I think, with
Daniel Green
and
I was on his show.
He was on his show. Oh my God.
I'm terrible at names.
The Wheel of Time guy. The guy. The wheel.
the dusty wheel.
The dusty wheel, yes. And so he was watching it with them, and you could tell he did not like the episode. I just appreciate that he's fully honest about his reviews of things. And obviously he won't go out of his way to negatively review something, but because he's connected with Wheel of Time, or this is something that people want to hear his opinion on, he'll go out and he'll say what it is. So he walks that line really well.
Yeah, I think that's something that of course, we're in a different position of, we are not creators in the space. I think better accurate to say that we're more critics in the space, if that's a position to be in, which
I don't know.
Sucks. Critics are parasites. We are parasites, but
no, we are two guys.
Well, it's not only that, like, we're not only critics, we're also supposed to be, quote, entertaining critics. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we don't have the luxury of being like kind of tactful about our words. We got to be energized. What
also,
we're saying.
I definitely don't look at myself as a critic. I look at myself as a, what's a better term?
A displeased fan?
No, I was going to say more as a, I look at myself as a reader who, without this podcast, would still be talking about the book with you. And
true.
It's just strange. I think, does the word critic come from when you're reviewing something that other people also see? Because it's the weird deviation and that delineate, give me the word, the delineation, the alienation, the deliberate.
You asked me to give you help, and then you just kept going. You want me to help?
Yeah, help me.
Delineation. There you go.
I hope that my struggle just gave you joy. That's all.
Oh, it frequently does. Yes.
I just knew you'd want me to keep going. So, okay. What was I saying? Delineation.
delineation.
It's that thing. You're so good. You're so good, babe. I mean, okay. the sexual lore increases as the episodes go. So, where was I? I just got lost in your eyes.
You're trying. My God. You're trying to differentiate ourselves from us from critics.
Yeah, I get
your point of critics. I kind of have the idea in my head of people like Chris Stuckman for movies, where like as soon as the movie comes out, there's a review. Mm. Often it's early and it's there, so you can go to and figure out, hey, is this movie worth my time?
Yeah.
And so same thing for books. It would ideally be something you go to figure out, hey, is this book worth my time?
Mm-hmm.
It's not really what we do. We're not really on time to anything.
Yeah, I think more of our stuff is we really go into the, if you've already read, sure, we have a spoiler free to go, hey, if you'd like, but more so, one of our jobs, Daniel Green said this on one of his videos that I really like how he put it, is know what our tastes are. And if you kind of know what Richard's tastes are and my tastes are, it could give you a good idea of if you'd like the book or not. Mm-hmm. So if we have a certain taste, you go, okay, I know Richard likes these kind of books. Maybe I'll like that aspect of it, because you're kind of more world first. I'm kind of more character first.
Also, if you know what my likes and dislikes are and you're the opposite, go ahead, read the books I dislike.
Exactly.
They'll probably be for you.
Because then on the other end of it, our more spoilerful stuff that goes on over an hour, that's really geared for people who've read the book and are coming to also geek out over it and go like, oh, I want to hear someone talk about the book I read too. And I want to hear how wrong they are, is most of it. So,
but no, it definitely fills that niche of, I know when I was reading a lot and you were not reading nearly as much as me, it was hard to, I read a book and I'm really excited about it and I just want to talk. I want to hear other people's opinions on it. I want to have dialogue. Oh, trust me,
you still talk, dude. This was years ago when maybe 3-4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And you would just go, oh, Austin, plot point, character point, world building point. I'm going, Rich, that's...
Why are spoilers.
Well, also, I'm saying, why are you literally saying plot point out loud? You should probably tell me what the plot point is.
but no, I missed it. I wanted people to talk to about it. And I hope that's what this podcast does, is it kind of fills that niche of someone who's read a book and they go like, dang, none of my friends have read this book, but I want to talk with someone about it.
Yeah.
They can watch ours and they at least get to listen in and feel a part of a conversation about the book they just read.
Yeah.
That's at least the goal.
Yeah. And hey, we enjoy the hell out of it.
Yeah.
And you bully me into reading more. So it works for everybody.
It's a cycle of bullying. It always works.
And before the Where's the Wheel of Time review comment comes out there, I have 8 hours left in the audiobook.
And God, still 8 hours. My God.
Let's just,
just go walk. Like walk for the whole day, like 9 to 5. You're out the house and you walk for 8 hours.
And then finish the book.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, let's just walk the book out.
Okay. The Wheel of Time review, Shadow Rising, will be out.
It will be out, but it's not going to be next week.
It'll be
it's not going to be the week after that.
No, I think it's coming out March. That's my prediction.
Really?
Yes.
You think it'll be out March?
Yes.
You have more faith in yourself than I do.
Let's go back to Sanderson. So another reason why I love Sanderson is he is nicer to me, because he's never been mean to me.
That is true. He's never been mean to you yet.
in a small way, if we ever do get to talk to Sanderson, oh God, imagine.
I'm looking forward to it. I feel like
he'll be on your side for sure.
I think so.
He's going to get the vibe and go, yeah, this Austin, he feels like the target right now. It's just,
yeah, even though Austin is more in love with my Stormlight books than Richard, for some reason...
That makes me hate him more.
That makes me hate him more.
Like, why, what a sycophant, right?
Exactly.
Oh, man. Yeah. So Sanderson, another thing to talk about with him.
Another one.
Is how he handled the article. This is a video we covered a while ago, but there was an article that came up about Sanderson and said, Brandon Sanderson is your God. It was titled that, and it was an article about this guy from Wired article, that was invited to his house and interviewed Sanderson, lived with Sanderson for several days, and was trying to find an angle of what story to create, but Sanderson was nothing but nice and kind and with his family and everything, but he wrote this article about Sanderson on how he's generally a hack, and talked about his his faith and how he was making fun of what he was wearing, and he just kind of went all over the place with
shots at him. It was nothing but trying to elicit a shock value, which kind of got out of us, so he succeeded in that right.
In a small sense, our title here of saying why Sanderson's the GOAT is a little bit of shock value, but also fulfilling because we do think he's the GOAT. So that's a little difference there, but
I don't know. He may think Sanderson's all... I don't know. To be honest, reading the article, it sounds like the guy just was trying to find something. And he could find nothing negative, and so he just kind of made stuff up.
Point being, though, what do you love about Sanderson's response to that article? Because, going through the article, you could go read it online on Wired, but Sanderson's response to this hit piece on him...
It was really well written. Of course, obviously, authors should have a well-written response, but would hope it's not some Twitter like vomit on it, like this guy Wired sucks, he's terrible. See?
You see the old game, you see.
Now he actually had a well-written response on his blog.
Yeah,
but he took the high road.
Uh-huh.
It took the high road while also keeping a level of self-respect, of going like, hey, felt a little betrayed. He felt betrayed over how he brought him into his home, was honest with him, and when a part of Sanderson's personal life was brought to light by the journalist, and Sanderson asked him to, not talk about that in the article because it wasn't really relevant, and it made him uncomfortable. That's like basically the first thing.
Was that about his emotions?
At this point, we're not spreading anything that Sanderson then talked about it himself, mm-hmm. of kind of how he's emotionally muted. Not like he's not a robot, but talk about his difficulties sometimes having empathy and emotionally reacting to things, where his love of stories came from, is that he can really empathize with stories' characters rather than himself. Which I found very interesting on why he loves to write so much. But dick move by the author of the article to actually release that. But yeah, the rest of the article is a bunch of, it's a bunch of bullshit. Talking about how, he's just so full of himself and talking about writing. It's like, I don't know. He's an author that you went and requested to visit and made a whole article about. Maybe the guy you asked, that the author that you asked to follow around and write an article about, maybe he knows something about writing. I don't know.
Because, he was also making fun of the fans a little bit. The article writer went to the conventions and was trying to find out, why do you like Sanderson? I was kind of shocked at the responses and just a bit of that. But I think the point to elevate is, first off, the guy that wrote the article as well, I haven't checked out his stuff recently. I don't know if he redacted. I don't know if anything's happened since then. But main point being, it was just more of a personal thing with him and Sanderson, where I could almost see an article that was written about someone who wasn't invited to Sanderson's house. You kind of had this outside view of him, and then writing that and going like, geez, this guy's da-da-da-da-da. It's just the extra added twinge of where Sanderson felt betrayed is that he lived with him for several days. And he let him into his home and he was talking about how he was let throughout all the house and how the showers were nice and the movie theater and all this stuff. So it felt like that personal betrayal.
The key to the article is when the writer of the article themselves said, they broke down crying because they realized that there was nothing. They had no angle on the story. They had they had nothing to write about.
Yeah.
Like apparently several times wrote down crying that couldn't figure out what to write on the article. Oh, is it a wonder it came out with this hit piece? It seemed like the last Hail Mary attempt.
But hey, also to his credit, it worked. We're talking about it.
True.
So, hey,
now
he did his job.
Poorly, but he did his job.
It's like writing a book so bad that everybody reads it. Is that doing your job bad or did you sell? Now,
all press is good press. See, but
think about it.
It works once.
That's right.
I don't know if that was particularly beneficial to his career.
Right. We've had some shorts that have gone out there where our takes are just atrocious.
Yeah, I'm specifically thinking of where we just got a lot of factual stuff wrong on the manga short.
We?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say we, mostly me, because I just didn't, I don't know manga at all. So I was posting a picture and I had the wrong picture up because I'm so that illiterate with manga, which is why we're not doing manga. So.
Oh, yeah. No, and the thing I got wrong is more of a miscommunication of basically me saying that a lot of manga is kind of a solo act. I understand that there are, like, it goes beyond that, that there are people that fill in for color panels. They do, like, you write the draft, and then there's other people that can help fill in the lines and do some other things. My point being, the story, the art, is kind of done by often one person, some of the bigger stuff, and that they have serious health detriment. Like, it is, they are so overworked that several of them have, health problems. I don't know. Seems like a lot ought to be on one person. That's kind of my point. But again, I was wrong.
We digress. On the, we digress. And all that
on the scope of it. Yeah, there's a lot of people that work on manga, and it's not just a one-man band.
Yeah, it didn't help that I didn't know what I was talking about at all. So
yeah, what'd you get? You put Toriyama instead of Oda. Oda on the front. Yeah.
Classic. Classic.
By the way,
yeah,
Toriyama died today.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
The creator of, is that Hunter? Or no, who, Dragon Ball?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
68.
Oh, holy crap.
Young, wow. I think,
how do you,
personally.
How do you pass? It's horrible.
I don't have further information. It's fairly new, but I think just...
It just happened today. Mm-hmm. Because we're recording this on
March 8th.
March 8th. Okay. Wow, that's horrible.
Yeah.
Okay. So...
Sad day.
Yeah, sadness. Sadness. But going back to finishing up this episode and leaving everybody on a higher note with Sanderson of... I think in totality, the one crux that this all comes down to is he just loves his craft. He loves writing, and it shows, and he loves it so much that he gets all the authors, all the fans, all fellow authors involved. And the final note on this, just to be like, hey, what can't Sanderson do? He's publishing epic fantasy. He's publishing novellas. He's publishing sci-fi. You know what he's also publishing, Rich? A children's novel.
Oh,
did
yes.
you hear about that?
I did.
It's called The Most Boring Book Ever. It's such a cool concept where it's, this book is boring. It sucks so much. And then next to the words are just really cool things happening with this artist he's working with. It's just a cute idea because he's had kids. He knows that picture books are great. Mm-hmm. And Rambler rating coming soon.
On a children's book, yes.
We're going to critique it. Be like, you know, Sanderson, this prose is like written for a four-year-old. And that's what we'll do.
Yet I think there is a difference between a lot of authors. So a lot of authors have a love for their story. Mm. You know what I mean? Like they have a story in mind and they love that.
Ted Williams? Or no, not him. What's the other guy? Give me the other name, the guy that you hate.
Patrick Rothfuss?
No, the guy you hate. The wizard one?
Oh, like, the
odd-looking vine was the intro.
I don't own the book, but... it's the guy. He sucks. Terry Goodkind.
Terry Goodkind. Yep.
Well, there's part of that, but I'm thinking of even bigger authors of, you know, George R. R. Martin and mainly Patrick Rothfuss, where they love that story. And I'm wondering, do you see the difference with Brandon Sanderson and Stephen King? I think they love writing more than their story. Yeah. They really enjoy their story, but they love the writing process more. It's a reason why they have like a wide breadth of different stuff. I know George R. R. Martin has written other things, but I just think it's kind of a difference. It seems to me that George doesn't particularly enjoy the writing process much. It seems to be grating on him rather than bringing him a source of joy. It seems to be draining him.
Right, because for the authors that don't write after they get a really successful series, there's probably a ton. We could have a whole episode on that discussing why. I have a couple theories, but one just offshoot thing to mention is if difficult things are happening in life or you're hitting a block or something's happening, for Sanderson, it's fair to say that he'll write whether he's happy, sad, crying, Like, that's his thing. That's his passion. That's what I'll always do. And I don't mean to speak for every other author. It just seems very easy for him because no matter what he wakes up during, of course, you have your hard times in life. I'm sure he has to take vacations. He has to take breaks and all this. Just like somebody else, for example, when they're going, another author, I won't say about the big ones because I have no idea about their lives. I won't claim to, mm-hmm. but another author can take that and go, like, writing's more of a arduous task, which, hey, it can be tough, but to them, it's draining. To Sanderson, it seems invigorating. That's the difference of maybe why he's able to just churn this stuff out.
Yeah. I just think it speaks to the difference of many people. They write because they have a story in their head. That the writing part is the draining. It's the hill they have to climb to make sure their story is heard.
Right.
Sanderson, I think, is a little different. He doesn't have the story first. Like, he genuinely enjoys the writing process and enjoys that, the whole craft, and also has a story to tell and enjoys that end result. So to him, it's not much of a hill to climb.
Right.
And part of that is probably training and consistency, but I think it's very admirable.
Oh, yeah.
There's a bunch of authors other than Sanderson that also really love the craft. Yes, it's just, I don't know if I'm speaking out of my ass. It just seems something I've noticed.
It's just, we're getting on our high horse and just talking why Sanderson's the GOAT. I'm sure that other people love writing just as much, and it's not comparing, like, Sanderson's the only one. No, just... Well,
hey, we were even talking with Brian McCullen, who, you know, Sanderson's student.
Yeah.
And hearing him talk about it, I don't know if writing was particularly draining to him, but he certainly did say, like, it's become a job, and there is a little
bit... Like, he lost his love for reading.
He lost his love for reading.
Mm-hmm.
But writing also, like, is more of a... Not a chore is the wrong word, but it's difficult. It becomes... Mm. I think draining is probably the right word to it. It's enjoyable, but draining.
Right.
Sanderson seems to pull from some bottomless well. Right. It's the difference between extrovert and introvert. Extroverts gain energy by being with other people, and introverts lose energy by being with other people.
I get you. Because, again, using this difference, too, between Brian or Sanderson or any author, Sanderson, mm-hmm. that doesn't make one person a better person.
No.
What we're talking about here is why he's such an effective author.
Extroverts are better people than introverts. Introverts suck. They're morally inferior.
Aren't you very introverted?
Incredibly so.
Which is weird because so many people watch you. How's that feel as an introvert? Well, I guess you're not talking with all of them right now.
Is that the difference? Part.
Ah.
I like talking with people. It's just in limited amounts
of time. I like talking at people.
Yes, and being able to then run back to my room to recharge after it. It's the best part of... pro tip for you introverts out there. Don't go to parties. Host parties. Because then you can have the party, 30 minutes to an hour, you're talking, you're mingling, you're doing your stuff, and then you go back to your room and chillax for like 30 minutes to an hour while the rest of the party goes on. Then once you're relaxed and charged, you come back out, and then you can mingle again. It's wonderful. You get to have a break from your own party. You can't really do that if you go to someone else's
party. You have to actually go to the party.
Ugh. I know. Sucks. It's terrible.
Rich, you're...
I love it.
Yeah.
10 p.m. rolls around, like going, I'm just going to go to sleep now. You guys lock up, and then you go sleep.
You treat parties like you treat a 9-to-5.
Yeah.
I got to take my lunch break. What do you mean? I got time to go home. But, hey, that is why we love Sando the Mando.
He is the GOAT. The GOAT of authors I hope to emulate one day.
Yeah. Hell yeah. I mean, hey, we hope one day to join Sanderson as an author. That would be... Come on.
Oh, that'd be
the best. Not as his level, but we'll also have a book out there that has negative reviews, but hey, it's also out there amongst...
Hey, it exists. Books. And, you know, it's on the same website as Sanderson's books.
And we both got a Goodreads thing.
Yeah. Hey, we're both on the same website.
Wow.
That's what I want, to be on the same website as Brandon Sanderson.
Well, that was the episode this week. We'll see y'all this coming Friday because it's 2 a week. So we'll see you Friday.
All right. Bye, y'all.
Bye-bye.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy.
It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.